to the Creative Pen Podcasts. I'm Joanna Penn, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options, internet sales and promotion for your book. The companion website is www.thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hi everyone, this is Joanna Penn for the Creative Pen Podcast, and today I'm interviewing Jeffrey Kafer. Jeffrey is an award-winning voiceover talent and narrator of audiobooks, commercials and characters. He won Best New Voice in the 2008 Voicey Awards and is represented by agents across the US. Welcome, Jeffrey.
Thank you. Thank you. I may have won Best New Voice, but your Australian accent is actually the best.
Thank you.
The Australian accent.
Thank you. That's lovely. Mine's kind of tinged with British.
well, it sounds great to me.
So can you just start by telling us a bit about you and about your background? Because I saw from your blog you were actually at Microsoft at one time.
Yeah, well, yeah, up until January, I was actually there for 10 years as a video game tester. I worked on all the video games that Microsoft put out for the most part. I won't go through the laundry list of this. This is for authors, not gamers. But and then I became a statistic. I was laid off in the big layoffs of January that made the news pretty much everywhere. I am now happily contributing to the 9.5% unemployment rate in the U.S.
but you actually took that and made something of it, didn't you? So maybe you could tell us how you became a voiceover artist.
Well, it's an evolving process. I've been doing voiceovers for about 3 years. I did them as a side business at Microsoft, and when I got laid off, it seemed like it was a pretty good time to possibly pursue this full time. I'm still looking for that day job. But in the meantime, I'm quite happy doing this. And I actually got started at Microsoft. They needed what's called Scratch VoiceOver for a prototype game they were working on. And since it's Scratch, it's not the real voice that's going to be in the game. It's just placeholder so that the artists and animators can do the proper timing. So they called me in, and I just had a blast being behind that mic, just doing characters and stuff. And it wasn't going to be out to the public, so it really didn't matter if it was polished or professional. I could just goof around and just do whatever came to mind, and it was a lot of fun. And that was initially what brought me into it. It gave me the bug. But I've been doing theater actually for, gosh, 23 years. I started in theater when I was 13, so I've always been dramatic. That's my wife.
No, that's interesting you say that. So you actually, you enjoyed it and you had some fun there and then turned it into something. And it's a brilliant example. I was also laid off in the January fun in Australia. So
Microsoft?
No, not Microsoft.
Oh,
another company. And so the same thing happened over here. It's quite funny. But
yeah.
And this is when my blog really took off as well. So yeah, I'm with you there. So so going back to, I guess, you've obviously now met other voiceover artists and you're kind of working in the industry. Who makes a good voiceover artist?
An actor makes a good voiceover artist. A lot of people think that radio people make good voiceover artists, and certainly radio is a possible first step, but when it comes down to it, even if you've got the most dry copy, you're still acting because you have to make that copy come alive. Even if it's just you talking about moving your mouse on the screen, giving a tutorial, you have to engage your listener. So radio people have a lot of the technical skills to be able to do this, but what The analogy I put up is if you listen to the radio and you listen to the DJs doing their thing, hey, you're listening to KWXYZ, they sound great. But when it comes time for them to read a commercial, the commercial usually comes out flat because it's different. When they're being a DJ, they're being themselves. When they're reading copy, they're becoming that character that needs to read the copy. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So there's a difference between being yourself on the air and being able to bring out the copy that's pre-written. So I always say that actors, being actors, were trained to take a script and make it our own and bring it to life.
No, that's That's interesting. And I guess the difference with authors is they're essentially, because obviously they're not going to be voiceover artists, but they write their own copy, and some of them might want to narrate their own books, either through podcasting or actually through an audio book like Podio Books. Can you give three tips for authors that can help them bring their books to life if they're doing a podcast?
Sure. Well, the first tip would be don't read it yourself. No. So one of the tips that I actually still struggle with is slow down. Most narrators read, amateur narrators read too fast. Designers call it white space. We call it silence, but there is so much story to be told by not talking. So if I have a sentence like, I expected Bill to walk through the door, but he didn't, sounds very different from, I expected Bill to walk through the door, but he didn't. The pause there tells so much more than the words. So let your copy breathe. Let your silence tell part of the story.
Mm.
So slow down is what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
Slow down and let the story tell itself.
That would be one. Mm-hmm.
That would be one. The other one, and I see a lot of amateur narrators getting caught up in this, is how do I do all these voices? How do I do women's voices? Well, you don't have to. The pitfall that people run into is they tend to over-exaggerate women's voices, and it comes off as a caricature or sometimes even insulting to listeners who are women.
Yeah.
So really, your character should be the one who defines how your voice sounds. If you've written your character as unique, don't get caught up in trying to make really distinct, very, very different voices. Some of the really, really good audiobook narrators, like Scott Brick, he's actually my idol. He doesn't do a tremendous amount of voices. He just does slight changes to the voice and then lets the author's writing of that character become the character. So if you've written your characters to be distinct, it's going to come out in the voice if you just make some slight changes to the voice.
Yeah, I sort of get that.
Sort of get that.
Well, when you say it, that sounds easy, but I bet that's really hard.
Well, it is hard because audiobook narration is the hardest form of voiceover work.
Mm.
And it's also the least lucrative, but that's a whole other story. Because you've got to have stamina. You've got to remember, you know, the character Billy shows up in the beginning of the book, and then Billy shows up at the end. Well, how did you do Billy 3 days ago when you were narrating this from the beginning? So you've got to remember how you did that voice. Now, another tip you can do is when you record Billy, save off that bit of clip of Billy to a separate file called billy.mp3 so that you have, and then you'll have a list of characters as separate individual wave files that you can go and revisit when you need to re-listen to what a character sounds like.
Mm.
Did I lose you there?
No, that sounds like a really good idea. Because, sometimes you can end up with really big, long audio files, and to find things again is quite difficult.
Exactly. Mm. Exactly. So if you just have individual clips named Billy, named Marge, named Joanna, and you'll be able to reference those characters very quickly without having to go and find where you read before.
Mm. Yeah, that's brilliant.
My third tip, and this one is fairly controversial, take off the headphones when you're recording. Now, most people are going to go, oh my gosh, how am I supposed to hear myself when I'm recording? Well, you have ears, and theoretically those ears work. Remember, you're telling a story. You're having a conversation. I don't know about you, but I don't wander around the day wearing headphones, having conversations with people.
No.
So why would telling a story to an audience that you can't see be any different? There's nothing. You can see the waveform on the screen, so you can see if you're popping. You can see if your levels are too hot. Once you've got your level set, take off your headphones and just have a conversation. Tell the story. It's all about the story. It's not about how you sound. Forget about how you sound. I don't have a great voice. I don't have the typical, hey, how you doing kind of voice. You're telling a story. It's not about the quality of your voice.
No, and that's a really interesting point, because I've been listening to quite a few books on audio lately, and I was listening to Scott Sigler. I listened to the first one of his books, you know, because everyone had said how amazing he was, and his first audio, you know, in the first minute, I thought, you know, his voice is really, I don't, you know, gel with his voice. But within about 3 minutes, you know, 4 or 5 minutes, I was like into the story, and yeah. His voice almost disappeared. And it was the story that mattered.
Right. Exactly. Mm. So I'm guessing Scott records with headphones on. But if amateurs out there are having a hard time getting into the storytelling mode, one thing they can try to do is take off the headphones and just tell the story as if your kids are sitting in front of you and you're telling them a story. Perhaps Scott Sigler's not the best example of stories you should tell to your children, but you get the idea.
No. No, that's brilliant tips. And I guess one of the questions there is, so your job now then, do you mostly audiobooks or do you commercials, or, you know, what is the job actually like?
I do pretty much whatever people throw in front of me. My niche lately has been audiobooks. I did Unconventional for J.J. Hebert. I did Kronos for Jeremy Robinson. Both of those are up on Podiobooks. I'm working for Mountainland Publishing to do a book. Gosh, I don't know. I've done about 6 audiobooks since January, which is kind of strange. But I also do other voiceover work that comes through. I'm actually I'm a routine narrator for a service that edits real estate video tours. So I get about 10 to 15 of those per day, usually on a good day. So I'd crank those out. I also did a video documentary for the National Wildlife Federation about the Louisiana swamplands. So I'll do whatever people throw in front of me. But audiobooks are my favorite thing to do. They really are. Because of my acting background, I mean, there's nothing more. It's a one-man play. The book is a one-man play. I mean, I get to do all the characters. I get to do all the voices. I get to tell the story, and I don't have to rely on other actors. It's all me. It's an ego thing, I guess.
Yeah, and so when you're reading a book, do you skip over any bits? You know, if you're reading a sentence and it just doesn't read that well, do you read everything, or can you skip over things?
Absolutely not. I have to read exactly what's written. If there's a typo, I'll go back to the author. I'll read it as it should be, as I think they're doing it, and then I'll email the author saying, I made this change. Is this correct? And one time I was actually incorrect, so I had to go and change what I thought was a typo. Was actually just a different way it was a more casual conversation, and he said, no, I want to keep it that way. It's not a typo. It's a dropped word because it's a casual conversation. So I said, okay. You read the word for word, and then if you have questions or clarifications, you contact the author.
And if the author themselves is reading, they can really do what they want, obviously. But I guess I just wondered, you know, when you're reading a book out loud, does it sound different to how it sounds when you read it in your head?
No. Well, what do you mean? I'm not sure what you mean.
Well, you know, when you read in your head and you're just reading a page, you might skim read some of it, and, you know, there are words that sort of merge, and it's hard, you know, hard to explain. But
I know what you're saying.
You know what I'm saying?
I do know what you're saying, and I have the unfortunate situation of not being able to do that. I've been doing this long enough that when I sit down and read a book, I read it to myself as if I'm reading it aloud, which is really annoying because I can't read books very quickly. Because I'm always doing voices in my head of the character. And I'm making these, remember I talked about the dramatic pauses. I'm doing those when I'm reading it to myself. It's really annoying.
That's hilarious. So how long does it take you to read a book then out loud?
Including production and getting it all ready from stem to stern, the whole thing?
Yes.
It's a 4-to-1 ratio. So for every hour of audio, of finished audio, it's about 4 hours to record. So your average 10-hour audiobook takes about 40 hours, a full work week, to record and edit. The time is spent in the editing. That's the big pain.
Mm. And do you do all your own editing?
If the client would like me to, yeah. Yeah, 90% of the time I do, yes. I've done one book where they just said, give me the raw files, and they did the editing, which was nice.
Imagine.
It was very nice. I can make mistakes and just send it off to them.
Yeah, that's brilliant. And can I ask what software you use?
I use Adobe Audition 2.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people use Pro Tools, which is sort of the industry standard for recording, but it's kind of like killing a fly with a sledgehammer. It's way more software than you need.
Mm.
You can get away. The average, an amateur narrator could get away with Audacity, which is free, of course.
Yeah, and I use Audacity for my podcasts. It's certainly the best free one, I think. So I guess when you're reading out loud, as you know, to do a production of an audiobook, are you actually kind of standing up acting, or are you sitting down at a desk?
I'm sitting down just for stamina's sake, because I'm in here doing this, you know, 4 hours. I don't want to stand up for 4 hours. I'm not physically animated. I sometimes will move my hand in the air or whatever, but unless you can channel that energy into the mic, this is not a play. So doing these gestures, nobody can see that. Maybe be able to hear it slightly, but you still got to be able to channel the energy of whatever movements you're doing or whatever the character is doing into your mouth, into this little square in front of you. So waving your hands in the air may feel good to you, but if it doesn't come through into the microphone, it's really wasted energy. I've been told, and looking at the YouTube videos that I did of me recording, I do a lot of facial expressions. And I never really noticed that before. So while I'm not physically animated, I guess my face is when I'm recording. And that helps. Because your face defines how your sound is. You know, if I'm smiling, you can hear me smile when I'm talking to you. So the facial expressions affect the sound.
That's interesting, and I'll put a link to those videos on the podcast because I found that quite interesting to watch you on there.
Wow.
And also, it's always nice to see people as well.
Yes.
So I guess if, you know, people might be listening and thinking, well, I'd really like an audio version of my book, either to podcast for free, because, you know, we know that can help get a book out there, or, you know, to sell as an audio book. So if people want to use a professional like yourself, how would they go about finding the best person? And how, you know, because people might want a specific voice or a type, how do they do that?
Well, every good voiceover artist will have a demo reel. Hopefully they'll have an audiobook specific demo reel. I do. Because audiobook narration is different from any other kind of narration. So if they're serious about audiobook work, they've already got an audiobook demo reel. So you can just Google audiobook voice talent or voice talent or whatever, and you can listen to their demo reels. And most of the time, you can send them a piece of your script, a piece of your book, and say, can you give me an audition of this? I'd like to hear how it sounds. And they'll do it. Mm. I do it. I've actually got a form on my website that'll give you an instant rate right there on the spot, and it'll send a piece of your script to me so that I can send you an audition. Did that answer your question?
Yeah, I guess it did. And I mean, you know, are there sort of specific people who would do children's books versus a nonfiction book?
I think most audiobook narrators will tell you they'll do any kind of book. Women tend to do more children's I don't want to say they tend to do more. They tend to be better at children's books, I think, because kids tend to latch onto the female voice better. I don't know. I don't want to get into psychology 101 here of children. But of the children's audiobook narrators, I hear a lot of women doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Nonfiction, depending on the subject matter, I hear men doing that. As far as fiction goes, it depends on the main character. The main character is always the gender of the narrator, or vice versa, I guess.
Okay. Got you.
So really it depends a lot on how the author hears the voice in the head. If their main character is the rugged cop who's grizzled on the force for the past 30 years, they probably want to get the similar style of voice for their narrator and their main character, because the main character is, for the most part, always read in the natural voice of the narrator, just for ease of stamina again.
Understanding that
it's most natural to the narrator.
Mm. And how is the audiobook costed? I.e., is it by audio hour, or how is that done?
It depends on, well, it depends on how the client wants to do it. A lot of times it's per finished hour, but then you have to factor in editing. I like to do just a simple 2 cents per word. If you're a audiobook author, 2 cents per word.
Mm-hmm.
That's an easy number. Everybody can do it, and they don't, you know, they can just do that on their own. If I say, well, $250 per finished hour, well, then they have to think, okay, well, wait a minute. I've got a 90,000 word book. How does that translate into total finished hours? Now, I've got a calculation system to do that, but not everybody does.
Mm.
So it's easier just giving them 2 cents per word.
Yeah, no, that's excellent. That gives me a really good range.
Right.
Okay, and of course, we've mentioned Podio books a few times. Can you just explain why that is a good idea for authors and an opportunity?
Podio books is great. I've been around since almost their inception. Podio books is a great place for unpublished authors or published, but mostly unpublished authors to get their work up in serialized podcast format. So if you don't have a big book deal, you can get your stuff up on Podio books. And you can get a following, you can get a fan base. There's been a number of authors who have gotten lucrative book deals through their part of their marketing on Podio books. Mm. Podio books is a aspect of your marketing campaign, of marketing your brand. Every author should be marketing as if they were a brand. Scott Sigler is a good example of that. So Podio books is one aspect of his marketing. You're not going to get rich just by posting a book up on Podio books. It is a donation supported site, but most people don't give donations. So if you have the impression that you're going to put your book up there and then make millions of dollars in donations, you're going to be disappointed, and it shouldn't be used that way. It should be used as one aspect of your marketing.
Mm. And I guess I feel with Podio books, and this is the sort of whether you should do it yourself or get a professional, that when I listen to the actual author reading, you feel like you get to know them as a person, even though that's really strange. You know, just because you listen to their voice, you spent that much time with them, you know, maybe you've spent 10 hours or whatever with them, and
right.
You know, you feel more like you know them. How does that differ if, you know, you read a book for an author? Do people feel like they know you, or do they still feel they know the author?
Well, if I'm doing my job, they know the author.
Right.
I'm just a I can't say this, I'm just a tool.
A really good one.
Yeah, thanks. And this is what I like about Scott Brick, is he doesn't get in the way of the book. Mm. And he says this. He's like, my job is to tell the story, and the author and the story should be the forefront of what people are listening to. If I'm going over the top with my characters, they're listening to how I'm doing the characters as opposed to listening to the characters themselves speak. So does an author reading his own book add character? I don't know. I think the author's work should speak for itself.
Mm.
I think there are better ways for an author to get to know his audience, and that's just through community involvement. Matthew Wayne Selznick is a good example of somebody who does that. Scott Sigler, Seth Harwood, all the big names on Podio books they're not big because they read their own books on Podio books. They're big because they have an overall marketing campaign, with one aspect of it being their book, and they get involved with their community.
Oh, you're absolutely right. And definitely, I wouldn't be suggesting people just do an audiobook and that's it. You know, it's kind of got to be part of that whole campaign.
Right.
I just think it's funny, when I started to do podcasts, I haven't done that many. You know, you feel embarrassed about your voice and you feel worried about what people might think of you. But, you know, that doesn't actually make any difference. But, you know, some authors might not want to be reading their book. They might be wanting to write or whatever.
Yeah. Not all authors should necessarily read their own book. If an author doesn't feel comfortable reading their own book, then, you know, that's what my services are for. So one of the things that I like to tell people is, if you're considering a professional narrator versus do-it-yourself, think again as this audiobook as a professional marketing tool. You wouldn't make your own business cards. You'd have those printed by somebody else. You have a professionally designed website. Your book is professionally written. Why would you have an unprofessionally produced audiobook?
Mm. Mm.
So that's one of the arguments for using professional narration. the other argument against that is I cost money.
Yes, and that might be the big stumbling block for some people.
Well, but I have an argument for that too. Again, let's go back to the 40,000 or the 40-hour time. The time it takes to record an audiobook is about 40 hours if you have an average 10-hour audiobook. Mm. That's a full work week. What else could you be doing with your time during that 40 hours? 40 hours is a lot of time to be marketing, to be networking, to be talking to people, to be marketing, marketing, marketing. Why are you wasting your time sitting behind a microphone? Outsource that to me. Let me take care of that grunt work while you're out there building up a name for yourself.
Absolutely. And I think coming back to right what you said at the beginning, which was you have a lot of fun doing this. You know, some people just would hate the thought of spending any time recording their voice.
This is tough work.
Yeah.
It's tough work. It is very difficult, grueling work. It requires a lot of vocal stamina. Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is why Podiobooks says we need the first five episodes of your book before they'll post it live. Part of that is they want to make sure that the narrator has the stamina to do this and the interest in pursuing this, because there's nothing worse than having a book up there that's half finished because the author got tired of recording.
Oh, absolutely. Okay, well, we're almost out of time. Just got I guess one last question. I obviously found you on Twitter, and you blog, and you have videos on YouTube, and you use social media, and you're obviously a freelancer. So I guess the question is all of that, you know, which authors also should be using for marketing, is all of that helping get you business? And is there anything in particular you recommend for people?
I recommend it all, actually. I've pretty much... There's a lot of reasons. I mean, I've signed up for every social networking site I can find. I may not necessarily be active on them all, but you can point back your profile to your home page, so that helps with search engine optimization. But aside from those technical things, yeah, I use Twitter and for professional stuff, and Facebook mostly for my personal stuff. And from there, it branches off into LinkedIn and other stuff like that. So just getting your name out there and getting involved with people who might be able to hire you is a good thing. I mean, I follow a ton of authors, and I engage in the conversation when it's appropriate. Same with people who do media production. I follow them on Twitter, and I engage if they need to. Just yesterday, somebody asked, hey, how does my portfolio look? And I went, it looks great. It doesn't sound so great. And I said, maybe I can help you out with that. And sure enough, as we're doing this interview, in pops an email from him. So yeah, getting involved in the community and making positive contributions is a great way to market.
No, that's fantastic. And so how can people find out more about you?
Well, I'm glad you asked. They can visit my website at jeffreykafer.com.
Fantastic. And I've had that was too quick. Many people go off into a whole list.
I don't want to dilute it. Just jeffreykafer.com.
No, that's great. And your blog has quite a lot of information about you, and there's, you know, about recording and some of your reels, hasn't it? So people can go listen to that too.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
No, that's fantastic. Well, thank you ever so much for your time, Jeffrey.
No, thank you. It's been delightful.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You can get more information on writing, publishing options, sales, and promotion for your book at www.thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with double N. And you can also get your free How to Be an Author workbook at www.howtobeanauthor.com. See you next time.